Raptors broadcaster Eric Smith on TV side and radio. E, thanks a lot for this. I think I've finally come to the definitive question in my mind about this team. Because after that Game 7 loss to the Nets last year, I thought, you know what? This isn't a championship team as constructed, but they can build from here. They can do something with this group. The way they play defense, what's going on with the passing of the ball, all of it, the chemistry, all of that, there's something to build on. I couldn't feel more different after these first three games against the Wizards. And it's not just the three games. It's the whole second half of the season, really. It's incredible. The core is not any different than that Game 7, but that's how I feel. Is that unreasonable?
No, I don't think it's unreasonable. I think it'd probably be crazy of me to say it's unreasonable based on how the series has unfolded so far in the first three games. But I tend to disagree about the second half of the season. The second half of the season wasn't great by any means, but I don't think it was as drastic or as dire as some people are maybe portraying it. If you kind of break it down into little 10-game chunks, there was definitely a spell where the Raptors were not good.
Yeah.
But to me, they still finished the season 7-3 and looked like they were maybe getting things back on track. The defense was improving a little bit. You were kind of feeling quasi-optimistic about their chances going into the first-round series. In fact, a lot of people would have considered the Raptors the favorites in this series.
Sure.
Because of the way that we thought they matched up, let alone the fact that they had taken three against the Wizards during the regular season. But it's kind of completely flipped upside down in the playoffs of what we've seen so far. And in spite of, you know, spells and stretches in all three games where the Raptors have looked okay, not great, but okay, there have been more stretches where they have looked really bad, lost, and certainly not clicking on any kind of cylinders, let alone all cylinders, like no cylinders on the defensive end. I mean, even last night, you look down, Ben, this key stat to me jumped out more than anything else last night. The Raptors cleaned up the offensive rebounds. They had they completely demolished the Wizards in terms of offensive rebounding, and more so second chance opportunity, something that completely kicked them in the backside earlier in the series. They dominated there. They were only outdone on the glass by 4 last night. They didn't turn the ball over a lot. I think they only coughed up 9 turnovers and 6 or 7 points off turnovers. It was a solid game overall, but you shot 37% from the floor.
Right.
You shot 37% against a team that's just been killing you defensively. And you're a club that made your name off offense all year, and yet again, you struggle. The Raptors had, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if you got the box score.
Yeah, I got it right here.
I believe they had 23 more field goal attempts and one more field goal made.
That's
I'm going
right.
on memory here, but I believe the Raptors
That's
had
right.
37 field goals made. The Wizards had
you're
36.
Right. You are the Rain Man.
Took 23 less shots.
I thought Jonesy was the Rain Man.
There is the story.
I thought you're
the story right there.
You're right. You're right. I can't believe you had those numbers. You must be looking at a box score, you liar.
I'm standing on a corner in Washington, just outside George Washington University, getting set for the practice.
Okay, nice. So it's hard to put your finger on, Eric, because it's so similar personnel-wise to the one that went 7 against the Nets and had so many mm-hmm. positive feelings. Now, I guess a lot of it does have to do with Kyle Lowry, who does not look himself. I mean, this series, he's looked horrible. But if you look horrible and you're not shooting the ball well, should you be taking 22 shots? Should you be taking 10 from beyond the arc and hitting such a low percentage? What is he shooting, like 25% this postseason?
It's a fair question. I think if you just even take the one game aside and don't isolate the one game and look at the series, look at even the season overall, to your point about maybe the struggles in the second half, I think part of the struggles of the team overall, in spite of how good the offense was in terms of points per game, was the lack of ball movement or unselfishness.
Yeah.
Because as good as the offense was certainly carried by a team that was heavily reliant upon jump shots, isolation, one-on-one type play. It was whether it be Lou Williams, whether it be Kyle Lowry, whether it be DeMar DeRozan, this team throughout the year and even throughout the series, I heard it yesterday from a couple of players, we need to communicate more. We need to play a little bit more unselfish. We need to move the ball. Guys have got to have each other's backs. I mean, they talk so much, and I'm talking not just the Raptors, but professional sports in general, about chemistry, about being on the same page, about guys being close and the locker room being tight and everything else. But then you get on the floor, then what are you talking about?
Right.
You're talking about not moving the ball, not communicating, not having guys' backs, not knowing if the guy behind you is going to have your man if he gets by defensively. All that stuff, it's plagued Toronto all season, and it's certainly plaguing them in this series. And it speaks to the point you're asking about Lowry and the field goal attempts and the amount of shots that he's taking and everybody else. I think it's the fact that they're not moving the ball, and I think that's what has made the Washington look so good defensively as well, is they're forcing the Raptors into tough shots because the Raptors aren't making that extra pass and aren't moving the ball as much as they need to.
Yeah, I think people can live with open shots that don't get in, Eric, that don't go in. I think they can live with, you know, a bunch of passes that eventually lead to a three in the corner that's wide open that clangs off a back rim. That at least is more eye-appealing than what the Raptors appear to be doing offensively, where it's getting those ISO. And we saw late in the game, just before DeMar DeRozan took that technical foul, I mean, he did drive the net, but I mean, there was two defenders there. He got partially blocked. It was like a horrible looking shot. I mean, that's been the Raptors' offense all three games against the Washington Wizards. Now, some of that has to go credit wise to the Wizards, who play some pretty good defense, and their big men have stepped up large in this series. But it also goes to what you're talking about not moving the ball, about talking up a big game, about communicating and sharing the ball and playing with a better flow offensively, and just not doing that on the court, which makes me come to the whole head coaching thing. And it's a conversation that it appears to be building steam over these three games about Dwayne Casey and his future. We know he's a great guy, and you can't just completely discount what they did last year, and you can't discount the 49 wins during the regular season. But I know in my mind I put some of this on him.
You know what? This is going to be long-winded, but I'm going to. The short answer is I hear you, and I would agree. You can't. You know, it's. I'm trying to come up with a way of saying this without using every sports cliche in the world here, Ben. But certainly, it speaks to at the end of the day, you know, holding everyone, including the coach, accountable for what happens, and you know, insert the cliche here of how easy it is, and I use that term loosely. Easy it is to get rid of a head coach and to maybe change the makeup or the feel or the philosophy of your team by moving the head coach as opposed to trying to trade or change your entire roster. So I think there's no denying that Dwayne Casey has to take some responsibility for what has happened to this team and for the ultimate downfall of the club, as you say, maybe in the second half of the season, but certainly in this postseason. I've said all year, and I'm not going to certainly back away from it now, but I think that they needed to win around this year. If you want to keep momentum going, if you want to continue to build on something, you want to continue to grow as an organization, I did not by any stretch of the imagination think that this was a championship caliber team, even out of the gate. Go back and listen to the recordings from earlier in the season.
Yeah.
I was never touting this team as an Eastern Conference champion, let alone an NBA champion. I think because of the East being as open as it was there a chance, if the matchups were right, to go on a run to maybe get further than you would have otherwise, you know, earlier anticipated or expected? Yeah, sure. But this was not ever a championship team. But this was a playoff team, and this was a team that I felt could and should win around in the postseason. And that looks like it's not going to happen, obviously, being down 3-0. But when you look at Casey overall as well, Ben, I guess if I were Dwayne Casey's agent and I'm trying to counter you or the critics, I would say, well, hold on a second. Has the team not improved every single year that I've been here in terms of win totals, in terms of playoff appearances, back-to-back division titles? Has DeMar DeRozan not grown as a player and gotten better? Has Kyle Lowry gotten better as a player? Has Terrence Ross improved? We could question that. Has Jonas Valanciunas improved? I think he has. And then further to that, I would say, well, hold on a second. All of the issues that we're talking about defensively with this team, weren't we one of the top 10 defenses and top offenses last year? Then we went out and made some changes in personnel and brought in a player like a guy like a Lou Williams. Yeah, we became an offensive team, but are you going to, you know, totally destroy me on the fact that we're not good defensively, yet we are one of the best teams and the number one team in the East in offense? So, you know, again, I think there's counterpoints to everything that some folks might say about whether Dwayne Casey is the right guy or the wrong guy. I think you have to look at it, the total package, and say he's done a lot of good things. And again, I think he's got a lot of ground to stand on by talking about the improvement, the steady improvement that this team has shown. And then if you or I or anybody else is saying the Raptors struggled defensively, but they also don't have a true starting caliber power forward, they've got issues at the small forward in Terrence Ross, their bench is fairly thin, especially when you talk about the size up front, well, could you have done a better job coaching them with all of these things that apparently the Raptors are hamstrung by and that they don't have? Again, I'm speaking just the kind of as devil's advocate, speaking as if I were Dwayne Casey's agent. But at the end of the day, you're right that people are going to have to be held accountable for what happens. And that's not just the players, but it's the coach too. And I think Masai Ujiri right now has got a lot of tough decisions to make regarding whether Casey's still the right guy to run this team and whether the core players and the key players are still the right players to take this team to the next step. Because he knows he's already got to make decisions regarding the three, the four, and major pieces to his second unit as well.
We know Masai Ujiri's not shy about making the big move. Do you get a sense from him how big this offseason could be as far as like a major move or firing the head coach or any of that? Do you get any, or does he just hold his cards so tight to the vest that it's hard to get any sense?
Quite honestly, I've got no sense. I'd be lying or spinning if I tried to create something for you right now, because he has been very quiet, very, you know, close to the vest in terms of what he's doing or what he's thinking. You know, last night I watched him and Jeff Weltman and Bobby Webster and Dan Tolsman, all of the front office folks walk out of the Raptors locker room. They were all, you know, sort of deadpan, quiet, nobody speaking, looked very serious, obviously walking out. Nobody's happy about the fact that they're down 3-0, so you're not really getting the sense of body language, pro or just obviously frustration that has set in. But you know, as I just said, whether he wants to show his hand or not, or show any of his cards or not, it's pretty clear that even if you put the coach aside, even if you just assumed for a second that Casey was back, the players alone, you know that there have to be decisions made. You've got Lou Williams, Amir Johnson, Tyler Hansbrough as free agents. You've got Landry Fields and Chuck Hayes as free agents as well. I don't think they factor into the overall decision in terms of the difficulty of decision. But you've got major decisions to make with Amir Johnson, Lou Williams, Tyler Hansbrough. And then you also, I think, have to look seriously at Terrence Ross at the small forward spot.
Yeah.
Beyond that, are you actually willing to uproot your core and trade away one of Lowry or DeRozan or Valanciunas? I don't think so, but clearly there are decisions to be made at the free agent positions, if nothing else. And then if you weren't to bring back a Lou Williams, how does that impact your bench overall? Can you go forward with a second unit that's got basically a 1-2 punch of Patterson and Vasquez and not much else? How else are you shoring up the rest of your core? Clearly it would seem like right now, down 0-3, and based on the way the postseason unfolded last year, maybe one of the greatest voids and needs on the team is more of a veteran presence at whatever position, and not just a veteran that's on the bench or on the roster to be, you know, an extra voice and a guiding light. No, somebody that can be that guiding light and that voice, but that can also play and contribute as well. You know, I don't know that it's Paul Pierce being plucked off a tree like the Wizards did. You know, I don't know that player exists out there, but it's someone that to me still can talk the talk, but also be able to walk the walk in terms of contributing and being a part of the rotation. Because I think it's sometimes it can be tough to be a voice, be a leader, when you're not actually playing as well. I mean, I think your words only carry so much weight if right. You're not actually out there on the floor contributing.
Yeah, which was weird. I mean, because Paul Pierce was such a small part of this team during the regular season and looked like he might be done the second half, but apparently he was just playing possum. He was just waiting for the playoffs, which is, I guess, what good older players do. Did you see this one? This happening for Paul Pierce?
Well, you know the crazy thing too about this is you know how the narrative could be so much different if not for a couple of big stretches. Like you think about even the game one.
Yeah.
Game one where he all the talk that was going into the game and he comes out, you know, world on fire. He was a huge difference maker in the first half. Raptors come back in that game, tied at 82, and nearly on a miraculous play on the lob, Terrence Ross nearly win it on an alley-oop dunk at the buzzer. That was a close play. But they held Paul Pierce to 5 points in the second half of that game, and he was scoreless in 8 minutes, didn't even attempt a shot in the fourth quarter in 8-plus minutes of that ball game. I thought the Raptors put the clamps on him and adjusted well. But then what happens? He hits the three ball to start overtime and then had another big bucket late in OT and helped seal the deal. And that ultimately turned the script again. The script could have easily been, you know, Paul Pierce came out throwing haymakers, looked like he was back in his words, but the Raptors got the best of him by, you know, taking him essentially out of the game in the second half and winning game one. But the script flipped in his favor. Game two, I don't think he was a factor at all, really. He was kind of a non-factor, but it was his backup and his protege, Otto Porter, that essentially was the difference maker. Say all you want about Bradley Beal and John Wall in game two, Otto Porter as that guy you weren't expecting to do much, hitting buckets, diving for loose balls, rebounding, you name it, he was the difference. And then what happens in game three? Paul Pierce, pretty quiet all night, but he was an absolute monster late in the fourth quarter, and who was his running mate doing the damage as well? Otto Porter.
Yep.
Those two guys have been the massive difference in this series. And again, if not for the late surge by Paul Pierce last night. Maybe we're not even talking about Paul Pierce right now because he had another average game, didn't really do a whole lot last night, but became the ultimate X factor in the last 2 to 3 minutes of the game and was that veteran piece that we're talking about, and certainly backing all of his words with the bravado that he showed. Hey, he's earned it because he's certainly doing it, and he and Porter are as much of a reason why this team is up 3-0 than, you know, as much of a reason than anybody else on that squad.
Yeah, and Pierce was getting torched a little bit defensively too by DeRozan, and Porter spelled him there as well.
Yep.
It is pretty wild. Before we let you go, E, because I know you got to go and cover the Raptors shoot around here practice before tomorrow's game, which you can hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 6 o'clock pregame. We saw this team really never get down on itself, even despite games where they got down a whole bunch early. Saw them come back in a big way in Boston earlier in the year. They came back and made it close against the Spurs in San Antonio. Came back after being down a whole bunch against the Cavs, I feel like, late in the year. It seems like we're seeing a bit different body language, and maybe that's just, you know, a recency bias, or it's the fact that they're just losing these games that I'm seeing that. But, I mean, we're seeing frustration that I never saw this team go through during the regular season. Have you noticed a difference?
A little bit. I guess maybe I might split hairs with you a little bit. I think game two completely got out of hand. There's no denying that. But again, game one, you fought back and tied the game in a horrendous day. It was an awful game, and yet you still found a way with a big-time fourth-quarter run to get back in the game and put yourself in a position to potentially win, but at the very least by sending it to overtime. And then even last night, Ben, you know, the Raptors pulled even on a Terrence Ross three. I think they gave it back. I believe it was Otto Porter that hit the three right after that to put the Wiz back up three. But then Kyle Lowry with his huge shot, Raptors down 102-99. They defend for 23 and a half seconds before Paul Pierce gets enough space to drain a three with just under 17 seconds to go to push the lead back up to six. If the Raptors played a half a second more defense, or if Paul Pierce misses that shot, the Raptors are going to rebound that ball, call a timeout. They're going to advance the ball over center court, and they're going to have a chance for a last-second play to drop a three to tie the game and maybe send it to overtime again. So I think that they had the comeback going again last night. But again, to sound repetitive, Paul Pierce delivered the dagger yet again under 17 seconds ago. He pushes them up six, and that was it. So I think there was fight, there was comeback, but it's just ultimately resulted in nothing as the Raptors now sit 0-3.
Someone's got to eventually break this streak of being down 0-3 and winning a series, right? Like, why can't it be the Raptors?
I would love to be wrong, but I don't see it happening. I mean, you're right. Somebody eventually in NBA history, somebody's going to do it. Some team is going to do it. I don't think it's this Raptor team. I said at the beginning of the series I thought they would win in seven. I guess my prediction could still stand.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not holding any breath based on what we've seen so far. I can't see this team winning four straight games with the way that the Wizards are playing defense right now.
I'm with you, man. But it's been a fun ride, no question about it. Eric, thanks a lot for this. Enjoyed it, and enjoy the game tomorrow on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Yeah, if the Raptors win tomorrow, I'm taking full credit.
All right, that's all you. Are you tie or no tie tomorrow?
I will throw a tie on.
All right, okay, we got a tie. All right, good. Thanks, man. See ya.
All right.
There's Eric Smith.